Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, an SMMT Test Day 17 special edition. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this time we're going to listen to Alan tell us about all the cars he drove at SMMT's Test Day last week.
There were. And you'll notice that we've got a very strange setup this time. It's a little bit like breakfast television.
Yeah.
Only not at breakfast time and nothing to do with television. Yes. So I was at the SMMT. T's annual sort of big test event at Millbrook. You'll have seen many tweets from many people who are motoring journalist type people and myself. From there, lots of cars driven by lots and lots of people. There are about 400 people attending, and there were many cars. But I was on my own, and I only got about just over halfway through, I think, everywhere that I wanted to visit.
Now, hang on a minute, though. You say I only got through. There was only you. The day was only so long. And if you drove a car, it was for, what, half an hour?
Maximum 25 minutes. So all of what we're going to talk
about.
Add
all that in. Plus,
yeah,
you were given a talk at the first thing, plus a safety briefing.
Yeah.
I take it you had lunch this year.
I did. I remembered to have lunch, and I had it with the guys from Smooth Traffic. Which was great. So we had lots of making fun of podcast listeners. No, we didn't do that.
They were without the trousers of truth, weren't they?
They were without the trousers of truth, so Johnny wasn't with them. But yeah, it was Ben and Rob. So that was really cool to catch up with them as well.
I'm sorry, Ben and Rob.
They were happy because I wasn't Johnny. That's what mattered. What mattered was that I wasn't Johnny. So I caught up with them over lunch and whilst we were taking pictures and stuff, which was really cool. And, yeah, I don't want to make this too much of a loving, really. Let's talk about the cars. People care about the cars.
What was... For anyone who wouldn't know what this is, what's the format of the day, then?
The format of the day or the format of each car? There is... Basically, they take over a whole chunk of the Millbrook Proving Ground in Bedfordshire, and different cars are allowed on different areas of the test site, really. So some cars relied on the high speed ball, which is like 2 miles off circle. It is absolutely circular, and when we're working our way through, I'll talk a little bit more about what some people do on that, because whilst it's circular, you can also treat it like it's straight ahead, and it really is. It's like this crazy optical illusion. And most cars are allowed on the hill route. Now the hill route takes a roughly 5 to 8 minutes to go around, in most cars, maximum speed of 50 miles an hour. So it must be a couple of miles long. And it is non-stop, uphill, downhill, hairpin, sharp turn. It's like every evil little bit of road you have come across ever, out in public, they've replicated that at Millbrook, complete with broken tarmac. It is not a pristine surface, and it is intentionally not a pristine surface, because the idea is that it replicates UKB roads.
Okay.
And there's also a city route, but none of the cars I drove, but I didn't take any of the cars on the city route, and some cars also have road routes, but it's not programmed into sat-nav. You have to try and read the map and do it on unfamiliar roads in an unfamiliar car at the same time. So I almost tried a Honda Insight, the original Mark 1 Honda Insight, mm-hmm. the really space age one. It was only allowed on the road route, so sadly I had to decline that one because I just couldn't spare the time to get lost, to be perfectly frank. that's what it came down to.
Faith in your own abilities.
Yeah. So Tom from Honda offered me that because I said, what about the Insight? It's just there. And he said, yeah, but it's only a road route. So I declined that because I was Norman Nemates. So everything I drove was really around the hill route. There's a couple of things that got taken on the high speed ball too. Talk about that as we go through.
Okay, so this was an SMMT day. SMMT, the MD, is he MD or CEO or chief exec?
Chief exec, I think. Yes, whose name I've now forgotten.
He gave a talk, didn't he?
He does. He starts off and he tells just some of the stats and some of the nerd numbers.
Sort of around. The state of the nation type chat to all the...
It was a little bit scary, by the way, when I turned up and I went to register, because, of course, you walk in, get pass, and the lady went, oh, yes, oh, I know you. You're the chaps that do the registration figures. And that was like...
Fame at last.
It is like... well, I think it's more infamy, to be honest, rather than fame. But yeah, that was a little bit... Oh, it's going to be one of those days. And actually, that's how the rest of the day went as well, which was a lot like that. Talking about it from a personal point of view, and I'm sorry to bore you listeners, that it was really nice that people recognised me. I think it was nice that people recognised me.
Without your green jacket?
Without my green jacket, and without me having to explain what a podcast was. I didn't have to explain what a podcast was all day, which
nice.
Was a huge change from last year. So
excellent.
Thank you, listeners, because you make this possible.
Right, should we move on to the cars now, then?
Let's move on to the cars.
What did you start with?
I started bright and early in the morning with a Toyota CHR, and it was the 1.2 turbo manual model. Now,
that doesn't seem a very large engine for that type of car.
Well, it wasn't too bad, actually. You're about to ask me numbers, aren't you? I can twitching to ask me numbers. So whilst it's a 1.2 turbo...
I'm not going
to
ask you numbers makes, because you've definitely... produced this, which I need a magnifying glass to read.
I do. It produces 115 metric horsepower. Let's try and not do that too often, please.
No.
115 metric horsepower. So it's actually nippy enough. But there are a couple of things that really surprised me about the CHR. So... we all know, I assume everyone at home. There was something I forgot to mention. There's going to be a series of videos to go along with this of me driving them and a little bit of spiel before and after. So if we race through stuff too quickly here, over the next couple of weeks, over some time, there will be vids of many of these cars coming out on YouTube with pictures and stuff. Okay, so please, if we race through stuff, try not to be too disappointed, because I'll try and make that up. Okay, because otherwise you're going to be listening for hours, and I'm going to be talking for hours, and I want to go to bed at some point tonight.
Okay.
So anyway, Toyota CHR 1.2, 115 brake horsepower.
The Toyota sort of Duke Qashqai.
It's the one that looks like a spaceship. And now, I had real trouble with this, okay, because I then sat upstairs and I'm writing some of the script stuff for these videos because, hey, sometimes we do that kind of thing. And I went and I checked out the size, and actually it's closer to the size of a Qashqai than it is to the size of a Duke.
Yeah, well, I remember that from the launch. There was people tweeting about things and I was saying, but it doesn't, in the pictures, it doesn't look that big.
No, it's bigger than you think.
It does have a lot of styling. However, it's not to the detriment of that. I think this is one of the best looking Toyotas at the moment.
It really is. I agree completely. And it is. I think it's particularly good looking. I think that the lines, whilst they go everywhere, and there is a lot of styling, it's quite a lot of cohesive styling. We'll talk about other vehicles which maybe don't have that luxury as we go along. But there were a couple of things that surprised me, one of which was actually the inside and the quality of the interior, because this is a far more premium vehicle than I expected. So I've driven French Dukes, quite high-spec Dukes, and none of them were nearly as nice as the interior of the CHR.
Well, was it the materials? Was it the materials they used in different areas?
Well, this was the XL model with, I think it was XL with optional leather. I forgot to pick up a spec sheet of that specific car. I know, it's
one
just
job,
not
one
nearly
job.
Good enough. It was the first one of the day. And the quality of the materials was really good. The quality of the finish, so there's like the door panels and stuff were interesting. It didn't pretend to be leather. I know that sounds dumb, but it wasn't that kind of pachyderm hide that we get everywhere. Everything had nice textures. There were black leather seats. Many of the touch surfaces were dark brown. I know that sounds a funny combination, but just somehow that sort of dark, dark tobacco brown really sort of lifted the quality of the interior. All the plastics felt good, and it was a really premium style of dashboard. The dashboard, the control area in the middle, is really dominated by a massive screen. And it really is. It's sizable. You know how many...
Is it Tesla-esque?
Oh, no, it wasn't that ridiculous. It was about half the size of a Tesla screen. It was still pretty chunky.
It was massive for a
touchscreen. Yeah, really. It seemed... that's what it felt like. And it really felt And just the way that that all worked and the way that it was, there were some fixed buttons right on the outside, but they were illuminated blue when you turned it on, so it's like blue LEDs behind it. It just looked really good. It was, I was genuinely surprised by that and just how nice it was. Controls and everything otherwise, once you got past the fact that much of it was guided through that touchscreen and had had a couple of minutes of poking, made an awful lot of sense.
Oh, so there's not many switches and not much switch gear. It's trying to go through the one central interface.
Yeah, apart from, I think, if I remember correctly, then the aircon controls were separate from that.
Okay. So what's it like behind the wheel?
You sit much lower than you expect. You really do.
Do you sit lower, or are the doors a lot higher and the windows narrower?
No,
you
do. The hip point is actually quite low.
Okay.
Central gravity is really quite low in that. The hip point isn't much more than 2 or 3 inches higher than a normal hatchback, and you sit quite reclined. So the whole feeling is really quite sporty. It really does start to feel
so it follows through a bit on the looks, because the looks are a little bit dynamic, aren't they? They're a bit, it's not actually a dull SUV look.
No, it's
whichever
it's
way
not.
You look at it, it's whether you like it or not, it's not dull.
Yeah, it's far more Marmite than it is strawberry jam, if you know what I mean. Everybody loves strawberry jam. And yeah, I don't need to work my way through the rest of that. But it handles really quite well as well. Now, remember, this is the 1.2 turbo. It's the first time I've been out in the hill route for a year. It was so, I didn't, you know, it took a little while to get used to it and just learning where the shift points were. On, as I've explained before, just like worst possible roads you could drive on a car straight off.
So you're on dreadful roads. What's the ride like? Because this is going to be a family-oriented vehicle.
The ride was pretty good. It didn't roll, but on the other hand, neither were you shaken about like mad, and you'll see that in the video as well. But it rode well on what I could test it on. It rode just fine. It rode really nicely.
Okay,
I didn't have a problem with that at all. One of the things, I know I'm tacking bits on here, is that manufacturers each year know exactly where they're coming. They know exactly what the roads are like. They know exactly who their audience is. So I would be amazed if it wasn't in the back of their minds to bring around along the right cars for the day.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So just bear that in mind when I'm mostly positive about stuff. Okay, that there's a lot of circumstances that are fixed here and that people can work to. Overall, I did like it. It's my mother has a habit of buying, has been buying RAV4s for quite a long time. The RAV's getting really big. I can see this as potentially her next car.
So the dog's in the boot.
Not the 1.2 turbo, but probably the hybrid. The dog doesn't go in the boot. Don't be silly. The dog goes in the back seat. Dog gets more space than the rest of us put together.
Okay, so space in the boot for you then.
Yeah, and there are also pretty much there are also curry hooks.
Good, pleased to hear.
Okay, I will note there was only one car of the whole day that didn't have curry hooks in the boot, because goodness knows I checked, because I know what somebody's like. So I will point out that one when I come to it. There was one thing that I was asked to point out. I was reminded to point out, was that at one point we've discussed the CHR before, and we've asked what the unique selling point of the CHR was, and we declared that we didn't know it. It is, of course, it's the only SUV in that segment that's available with a hybrid, which was pointed out to me.
Oh, okay.
To remember about that, so I felt I feel obliged to pass that on.
Somebody's made the effort to tell you.
Yes, someone did. They might have said that they sat in a traffic jam and shouted at the stereo in their car as they were listening to us. So I do feel obliged to pass that one on. And still,
so you've been speaking again then, haven't you?
Yeah, it's obviously me.
Right, so that's, you've done that.
Brief.
What was next?
Next up was the new Honda Civic. In this case, the 1.5 VTEC Turbo Sport. Now, that's the next fastest one, I believe, to the Type R, which is going to be launched in the middle of June.
1.5 is the next quickest.
Is the next quickest, yes. But
is that going to be the S then?
It's essentially, I think it's the equivalent of Type S. Until they may well fill the gap, but it's still 182 brake horsepower hot hatch, which I don't know. To me, that's pretty reasonable. From 1.5, 182 brake horsepower, that metric brake, mm-hmm. For those who like to know these things, and 240 newton meters. Yeah, so it's okay. Rapid enough. It'll hit 137. You can tell I've got the spec sheet in front of me because I keep looking at it. And it does 0-60 by 8.3, which isn't awesomely quick.
What VED band is it?
Oh, now you're asking me for difficult ones. I don't know, but it's 133 grams per kilometre.
Okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, throughout the range, they'll have ones that are closer to the...
Yes, exactly. Well, there's a whole
minus
range.
Minus 100,
etc. Right the way up and down.
Or less than 100, even. Not yeah. Minus 100. That would be incredible.
That would be fantastic. The government would be paying you to drive it by yes. that point. Shall we start off with the looks?
Do you want to start with the looks, or do you want to...
Right, no, let's start off with the looks, because I am still blowing hot and cold on the looks of the current Honda Civic. Sometimes I'll see one, and the pictures I took, the one I had was the sort of flat grey colour. I've forgotten the name of the colour. Sonic Grey Pearl. And it's the one that you'll have seen in all the magazines. It's exactly the one that you've seen in all the magazines. And from some angles, it looks fantastic. From other angles, you just think, oh, what were they doing? Because sometimes the sort of all the styling that's been thrown at it looks really, really good. And from other angles, it's like, oh, none of that works together. Did one person design that and somebody else designed the other part? And how did they match that up?
There are some colours that are more flattering to... the lines and the angles that it's got yeah. as well. I've in my town we've got one or two that are black,
mm-hmm.
and that seems to work very well with yeah. the shapes and the swoops and the slashes and everything. There's a white one there, and that doesn't work. I mean, I know it's white, and I know I'm biased about not liking white cars, but irrespective of that, it doesn't flatter the car with all the lines that it's got.
No. In all honesty, the Sonic Grey is pretty good.
Okay.
Sonic Grey with the black accent parts, so it was like grey and black all over, looked really, really good. And when I took the pictures from the good angles, which are all the like sort of the angles that car designers draw. You'll know the ones I mean. So it looks great.
So it's fairly Marmite-y in
really Marmite-y in looks. I keep flip flopping, and I've got a pretty open mind when it comes to looks of vehicles.
Okay.
Well, I do. I'm a Veyacross. Got to. In that inside it's a bit like a TARDIS. I mean, it's quite a big car nowadays, but
it's still quite wide.
Yeah but still in the back it's like limo. I was gonna say almost limo like legroom, but it really is. It's there's a lot of space in there, and similar in the boot, there's quite a lot of space too. One of the
curry hut
a plethora.
Good.
One of the things that I noticed that's weird about it is that, you know, normally when you have a car and it has the boot cover, the soft boot cover, because it doesn't have a lift up one, it's got one like
the retractable.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you think of retractable ones, you think you stand at the back of the boot, and when you lift it up, it goes in. Okay, and in towards the back of the back seats.
I know what you're gonna say.
This one doesn't, it goes across the way. And in the video, there'll be a little sub video, which is kind of cool but weird.
I'm not sure about that one. I'd have to use it.
It doesn't.
Because I'm not convinced for most cases that unless it can stop along that run.
You know, why would you want it to stop that run? What's really good about it is that you don't have a bar across the back of the seats and something that you then need to remove. Because it's all built in.
But if you've only got one package that stands upright, you don't want everybody else to see the whole thing through. This is why I say I need to see it in action.
I think that's a really weird use case. I don't understand why it wouldn't work for that.
Okay.
To an extent. Because actually, half of it is the rolly thing. The other half is attached to the hatch.
Okay, that's why I need
so
to
there's
see
lots
see,
of stuff that comes down.
Right, okay, okay.
So it works. It works pretty well. Again, loads of space, plethora of curry hooks, loads of space in the back, comfy in the front. The controls were just car controls. I know that sounds silly. One of the things that's a bit odd, though, is that many of the gauges and dial area are very square. They're just a bit. They're a bit 8-bit. If you know what I mean. Or maybe even I'll go as far as saying the 16-bit graphics. Not that the actual graphics are like that, but everything's just kind of blocky. It's as if they've taken that sort of slightly Lego look from the outside and they've applied it inside as well, and it's a bit weird. It's also, but I say it's a bit weird, it's also far less weird than the previous generation, because no longer do you have those kind of two stages of dashboard, which I think you'll have seen whenever I had the Civic Type R. You have the numbers and everything, you know, the speedo and everything far away from you, and
there's
then you have the rev
count.
Multiple displays. They've harmonized that, but in a way, I think it's lost some of its charm with that. It's just a bit more... It's a bit more normal in its layout, and that's a bit of a shame. I'm slightly disappointed by it.
All right, so what's it like behind the wheel, though?
Again, it's the sporty one. It was the hill route. It was nippy, though, and yeah.
I would hope so.
Well, yeah, it was. It was nippy and quick and didn't... You didn't feel left behind on that. It was the engine was particularly flexible, so even when I was in the wrong gear, there's one summit you climb, and then it sort of disappears over the top and down the other side. And in the first few outings of the day, I was generally in the wrong gear. That was a bit much for the CHR. It was just fine in the Civic. Civic had that extra oomph to just pull it through, where I had been a bit of a duffer.
The grip, I presume, was decent.
Grip was fine. Grip and all of these things was just fine. Nothing was like, at any point in this. The ride was definitely firmer than the CHR, but not as firm as some of the other cars will come to. Again, didn't feel shaken around, didn't feel any of these things. But really, it wasn't far enough to give. And none of these ones with like ride and handling, it was like, yes, it went round the corners. And unless it was exquisite,
but you weren't. You weren't. There was. You had confidence in it, is what I'm saying. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There was
yeah.
no concern at all.
No concern at all.
Okay.
The steering was a bit. You know, there wasn't a huge amount of feedback in the steering there, but it was just fine. There was nothing to worry about. If that's like the most pathetic conclusion ever.
Well, no, but I'm interested to hear that it's bigger on the inside because. I've tried the 1.8 Sport, and it got all three of the cracked windscreenlets in the back, but a bit more room would not go amiss.
So no, it's definitely wider than its predecessor. And again, the seat was nice and flat, so it wasn't sort of cut down. It wasn't overly sculpted or anything. Mm. So that was just fine.
Interesting. Okay. So what do you move on to next?
So next in the list, and I can't remember if it was the next one I drove, was actually the Infiniti Q60 3-litre twin-turbo all-wheel drive. Now, I'll confess now, some of these cars are not very motoring podcasts, but that's because I like them, or I went, ooh, that's free, I've wanted to try one of those.
And yeah, but that is part of the day.
It is part of the day, absolutely.
That is
part of
the day,
yeah.
Is to go and try out stuff that routinely you wouldn't, as a matter of course, or you wouldn't get the chance otherwise. Yeah. So, I mean, this the whole point of this is to experience a bit, you know, broaden your horizons.
Well, I wasn't broadening my horizons very far. Because
well, not with the Infiniti.
Up until not long before we started Motoring Podcast, I should explain that I had the predecessor of this car. So I had a G37. S. So that's the coupe, G37 coupe with a 3.7 litre V6 petrol engine. Now, they've replaced that with a 3-litre twin turbo petrol engine. And instead of just being rear wheel drive, it has all wheel drive. So
I take it that it's a
It's a whole new car, by the way.
It's a little bit nippy.
It was rapid enough. So let me find the spec sheet of Magic, because I couldn't possibly remember all of these. I'm sorry, folks. Yeah, was it was still putting out. It was in red. It was really very nice. Great. And it was a 405 brake horsepower and putting out 475 newton meters of torque.
It'll do.
One could make sufficient progress in that car. And the thing was, that despite the fact that it was 0.75 litre less engine than its predecessor, it certainly didn't feel like it is actually more powerful than its predecessor. But again, I got into it and I felt... So, by the way, it is a two-door, 2+2 coupe, quite a large coupe. So
a bit like probably an A5 size.
Yeah, it's A5 size. It's a bit bigger than the 4
but
Series.
But it's with Infiniti's new styling language, so it's not what used to be the...
It's not. It doesn't look as much like a whale as the previous generation.
There's
did.
A bit more. There's definitely more purpose up front. There's sharper edges and lines.
It's the G37 that's been to a personal trainer just to tauten up some of those lines a bit, just to make it a little bit tighter. I mean, you've seen the Q60 for almost a year was the title page car on the Motoring Podcast front page. So we've covered it before because, to be honest, Infiniti always illuminate their stand at the Geneva Motor Show really well, so it's really hard to take a picture. So it's really hard to take a bad picture at the show there. It was a lovely thing to drive.
And
there were a couple
the
of things that got
climb
rid of.
As, hill climb as well, yeah.
Yeah, I did the hill written there. One of the things that's missing, by the way, that they've taken away was that the G37 had, when you made the steering column electrically move, then the whole instrument binnacle went with it, just like a Porsche 928. Sadly, that doesn't happen anymore. It's just the steering wheel and steering column that moves, just like a normal car. And that was a bit of a disappointment. Well, I mean, I'm really picking hairs here. Okay?
Did you hand the keys back at that point then?
Yes, yes. I just went, Terry, we don't want this. I definitely didn't. And it was cool. So the inside, very familiar again, 2+2. You don't really want to be in the back of this, not for any period of time. Absolutely can't fit three across it, partially because it's two leather chairs in the back with a plastic bit down the middle for holding, I don't know, stuff. Stuff that you'd want
to
roll out.
Doesn't have the seatbelt for three. I think it's only got the seatbelt for two anyway.
Only got two seatbelts. As ever, the front seat's incredibly comfortable. Heated. I don't think these ones were cooled. I can't read quickly enough to check if they were. No, they're not.
Weight saving.
Not much weight saving going on there. And again, one of the things that I was really worried that I couldn't find a switch for originally was the fact that you can adjust the bolsters to just hold you just right in this, which was good on the hill route.
Like you total snowflake.
Total snowflake. The mine, it was just a nightmare.
Absolute princess.
It was brilliant. It's great.
So then, moving on from the disappointment that there wasn't the personal masseuse in the car with you.
There wasn't, but as ever, you had to fold the back seats and press a little button, and then Hiroshi, or whatever his name is, that's what he was called in mine, that will then move the front seat forward to allow rear passengers into their prison. Should they do? It's great. It's great, by the way, because all I had to do when I got mine, and this remains the case for the Q60, is you put a couple of colleagues in the back once, they grumble so much to all the other colleagues, nobody ever wants a lift in the back ever again. So you essentially end up with a two-seater.
Is that not just your driving?
No.
Okay. So what's it like behind the wheel?
Again, this car...
Apart from rapid.
I got into it. Well, it is sufficiently swift, as you can imagine. Again, no problem with the hill route, no Alan being in the wrong gear, any of that kind of stuff.
Is it flappy paddle or...?
It is flappy paddle, and there's another good point. One of the things that this is missing, which was one of the things that I really loved about mine, was previously it had cast magnesium leather-edged paddles, and now you've only got these little flappy plastic things behind the wheel. But to be honest, it's such a good gearbox. I, again, And again, maybe this is a reflection on my driving. I rarely feel the urge to use flappy paddles on a good automatic gearbox because it's already in the right gear. It's better at this kind of stuff than I am.
Yes.
As I say, it could just be me, but generally...
No, I'm with you. I hardly ever use the flappy paddles myself.
Tap them to engine braking.
But then again, you know, I'm not one for wanting to go around corners sideways or with the tail flicking out or any of sort of stuff.
No,
so that's not my bag. But I totally agree with you. Modern gearboxes now are just stunning, mostly.
And it's just and one of the nice things about this is if you put it into sport or any of these, as it downshifts, it doesn't just go. This one actually blips the throttle and goes rum rum rum. So it's making all the right noises.
The little child in me would really enjoy that.
It's making all the right noises. Why do I need to mess with that? So no, absolutely not an issue there. Steering speed sensitive steering. One of the things I'm not sure is whether or not this one has steering rear wheels or not. Because mine did. Oh, I don't know what acronym they're called these days. I'm sure someone will correct us if we're wrong on that. I'm not sure it did, but it's still. You know, turning was good. Again, it's a sports coupe. It's not going to roll that much. But on the other hand, you feel that you could get in there, set that cruise control, and just head for the south of France.
I was going to ask, when you say sports coupe, is it more of a long-distance cruiser?
More GT.
So it's not sports car, it's more cruise quite quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Comfortably.
Yeah. In all fairness, it would sit somewhere between the hill route at Millbrook and the high-speed bull.
Okay.
It could sit on the high-speed bull all day. You'd just set the cruise control and it would just go round and round. But in reality, you'd want that sort of long 20-mile motorway stretch that you could try it on or something. So, yeah.
So you quite liked it then?
I liked it a lot. But that was pretty much a given. Given in the past, I had ponied up.
No, that's not necessarily
true. Not necessarily
though,
true. It's a new generation.
You would be quite a strict and quite harsh in what you were judging it against because you had such favourable views of your one that you had. So therefore, it has to hit certain criteria and improve on that.
That's true. I've been a picky sod. I don't know that anybody else would have got into that and grumbled that the whole instrument cluster didn't move with the steering column.
No, they wouldn't, Princess Alan.
No, they wouldn't. Shut up. No, they wouldn't. And that's because I was, very familiar with its predecessor. And so, I'd done 50,000 miles at the wheel of that car over 2 years. Less than 2 years. I'd done a ridiculous mileage very, very quickly in it. So I knew exactly what to expect whenever I got into it. So I would say I was probably the harshest person to have driven that car that day because I spent more time with one than anyone else there at Millbrook that day.
Okay.
Similarly, by the way, I didn't try the new MX-5 or the current generation MX-5. I wonder why that might be. That I was offered and I said, well, I've probably done more miles than anyone else here in it. And I said how many, and they went, oh, yeah, you probably have.
Okay, then. So we move on from the Infiniti you like. What did you go on to next?
Next up, I moved on to, was it my favourite? It wasn't my favourite car of the day overall. But it was, but I think it was the one that at the end of the day, if you had to just pick one and take it home, this is what I would have taken home. And it was the Volvo V60 Polestar. So the Nutter 3-litre...
Was it in proper blue?
No, it wasn't. It was in stealth black, and that was one of the things I liked most about it. So it was the Nutter 367 horsepower V6 8-speed automatic sensible family estate car.
Sounds perfect for me. I don't know why you were driving it.
I know, it just... just lovely, really. It was like a really growly hot hatch had grown up a bit. I was just stressed a little bit.
You've had your GTI.
You've had your GTI.
You now need a bit more room.
Yeah.
So okay.
But, you know, right from the off in this. Now, the V60 aspect of it, I confess, having driven some of the latest generation of Volvos, was having driven some of the latest generation of Volvos, I've driven an S90, I drove a V90 on the day, I've driven an XC90 very briefly. Mm-hmm. The interior, whilst I would have got into it in any other car and got, oh, this is really nice, I went, this is a bit dated. But you know what?
Only against Volvo, though.
Yeah, comparing it against other Volvos. Well, compare about the latest BMWs and stuff too, perhaps. But
how old's the V and the S60? I mean,
they've been around a while.
They've been around a while, haven't they?
They've been around a while. And it was still nice, don't get me wrong. I'm trying to qualify the fact that it feels a bit old-fashioned.
It's not the latest generation, but that's not to say that it's not nice.
No, exactly. Absolutely not. And by the way, when I'm talking about the interior, when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about like the central console stuff. I'm not talking about the seats, which were leather and Alcantara-y suede-ness of lovely. They were Volvo seats.
Technical terms.
And bolstered Volvo seats. As I said in one of the previous editions of the Motoring Podcast, this is the stuff that you don't get in print. And it was just, I got in, I went, and I went, ooh, uncomfortable there. And then I started.
So there's no offset pedals.
Oh no!
Against steering wheels.
No, there were other cars that had that.
You've found in other vehicles that you've driven in the past.
Yeah, no, didn't have any of that.
Okay, good.
None of that kind of rubbish. It's a Volvo.
Mm-hmm. Does it make a nice noise?
Well, I started it and it went.
Okay, makes a nice noise.
And it does do lots of, and in the video you'll actually hear the fine noises it makes on acceleration, even when you're not in sport mode. So it was a bit of a head twister on that one, because it just felt fantastic. Now, obviously, as you'd expect, the interior, it's a Volvo estate car. Do I really need to go into that in any more detail? So again, limo-like legroom in the back room, in the back seat even, sufficiently large boot, curry hooks, all the usual stuff, and two exhaust pipes at the end, which were about at least three and a half inches in diameter as well at the end. And it was just exquisite from that point of view, really. Really, just great.
Okay, so you've sat in it. It's comfy. It's a Volvo, so it's lovely inside.
Yeah,
you started it up, and it's making the right noises.
Oh yeah.
What's it like when you take the handbrake off and move forward?
Is this four-wheel drive? It's four-wheel drive. Yeah, okay. Oh, you've hit one of the buttons of the. You've hit one of the things of the day, haven't you? One of the themes of the day was the electronic handbrake.
Most cars have that.
Mercifully, not something I have to put up with normally. Just the sheer lack of standardisation as to how these sodding things operate is my challenge. I don't have a problem with my handbrake being electric, but please, somebody, somewhere, make them all work in at least vaguely the same manner.
Press or lift or...
Press, lift, whatever, or maybe you don't need to touch it. And the car does it automatically as you start to move away. Just somebody decide, please, because it's awfully confusing. And I know that this was a ridiculous situation. You, if I'm complaining about a piece of technology, then you can bet that you're going to be two or three times as bad.
Well, I wouldn't have been banging my elbow on it.
Sit here and make fun of me all you want, but I know how bad you'd
be. I will.
Yeah, I can see.
Okay,
that
so once you've managed to work out the crystal maze... confusing releasing of the handbrake.
Yes.
What's it like on the go?
Let me read some things from here. All-ins adjustable shock absorbers. Launch control and sport... launch control, I didn't realize that before. Launch control and sport plus mode. Six piston Polestar stroke Brembo brake calipers with ventilated Brembo front discs. 3-inch stainless steel full flow active exhaust system and twin 3.5-inch tailpipes. Do you get the idea that it's going to ride incredibly well for its size and shape on those Ohlins dampers? It can fairly shift even in sort of normal sport, even in normal mode and sport mode, let alone sport plus mode. And quite frankly, the massive two-part brake discs with a different inner from outer, and as it says, those massive six-piston front brake calipers, it goes, it rides and handles, and it stops.
Your 25-minute drive was actually only 15.
It was particularly, it was quite rapid, yes. Remember, of course, that the saloon version of this car currently holds the lap record of the Nürburgring for saloon cars.
Which it did all sneaky.
Which it did all sneaky. And so, well, we can't, of course, be the ones that show off that we have, that we are faster than the others, because that is not the Swedish way. So yeah, to give you an idea of what that's like. And, of course, it's got all the safety systems that you'd expect. It's got your blind spot monitoring. It's got your don't run over people monitoring. It's got all these things, reverse cameras, all that stuff.
Yeah, okay, so what's the downside?
Almost speechless. It's probably going to be the emissions, which are going to be horrible. 186.
Well,
VD band J. That's not so bad, actually.
It's not horrific.
It's under 40,000, so you don't get hit with a jealousy tax. And
are you sure?
That's 40,000. I thought it was over 40,000.
I thought the price was more.
Oh, darn. It's 50,000. Almost 50,000. The ones I was looking at used on Auto Trader. Under 40,000. Not that I was looking at these on Auto Trader. Not that I like it enough that I was looking at it on Auto Trader.
So what's the MPG then? Come on, because there's got to be a downside here, because I'm not seeing
26.2
a downside.
26.2 urban, 48,
well, that's not awful.
42.8 combined, 34.9 fuel consumption.
I'm still not that's seeing not, any downside.
I couldn't find one. I loved it.
So why haven't they sold more? Is it because they didn't want to sell more?
I think it's a little bit of that. I would imagine they've not really marketed it very hard, have they?
No.
And there's the fact that I think it, to an extent, limited production. And also it's...
Exclusivity, yes.
Exclusivity. And also it's not a Mercedes, it's not a BMW, it's not an Audi.
Again, if it not, said, not seeing a downside
if
here.
If it said RS4 on it, then they go out the door like hotcakes. Mm. But no, not so much the V60 Polestar.
So by the sounds of it then, reading between the lines, and I know I'm going to have to dig deep here, I think you might have quite liked that one.
It was all right.
Okay, so what did you have next?
I loved it lots. So I went to the other end of the Volvo.
What, 340D?
No. The other end of the Volvo Estate line. So as far from that level as possible. And I went to the Volvo V90 D5 Cross Country. So they jacked up big estate car. So that's the most powerful diesel engine.
Almost the car you would ever need. Almost, because there is never that.
Well, but put some winter tires in that Polestar, and I would.
But that looks, on paper, would cover 99% of what most people would ever need to do.
Yeah, and do you know what? The trouble with talking about this car here is that there's absolutely nothing here that's a surprise to you at all. Because it is...
Apart from perhaps my levels of jealousy.
Apart from your levels of jealousy, it is a large estate car that's been jacked up a bit and has a little bit of cladding, but very little really. But the old plastic cladding, and I like some plastic cladding.
We do like plastic cladding on
the
show.
We do. Cladding is a big deal in this show.
Yes. Macho brownie points for that.
It's a great looking car. We've agreed before how good looking the V90 is. Better looking than the S90 because it doesn't have those odd rear lights.
We know the interior is fantastic because we've tried a S90 together. The
interior is fantastic. And in this one, it had the full panoramic sunroof as well.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really weird. This was proper. Oh, how do I word this? This was proper public school playing field. I'm allowed to say that. Proper public school playing field spec. So there was no tinty drug dealer back glass. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. There were no big blingy alloys on it. This was standard. It was black. I don't know if that was a standard or if there was a color tax on that. But other than that, it was standard. It was the dark interior, sadly, not a light colored interior. But to be honest, in the cross country, that makes more sense. Really.
But with the panoramic roof,
made it nice and bright.
Doesn't matter.
So yeah, controls, dashboard. It's just like any of the other modern Audis.
The only problem I have, though, with the Volvo is everything's through that touchscreen.
But one of the things I've been discovering recently is that I don't need to press that as much if you have one of these sort of CarPlay or Android Auto systems. The only thing that was tricky was for many of these, and we might as well say it now, with the videos, there is sometimes quite a lot of fan noise. It was 27 degrees. Most of these cars were like blooming.
Bless you. Sacrifices you make for us.
So there had to be some kind of fan on.
Melted snow.
To stop me melting and just basically being a sort of glossy shine on the camera. So there is a bit of fan noise. And one of the things was it was tricky to turn the fan to the right level. There were only like 4 fan levels in the car. So I had nothing or I had...
If only there was something.
If only there was something which could give you a fine level of adjustment.
Really, yes. That we're all used to.
Could give you a fine level of... Could, I'm sure, be configured to give you a fine level of adjustment, and it is only a software.
But I don't like everything in that.
It was a little bit off-putting.
There's certain things that you could do with being a switch, and wouldn't make that much of a difference to the interior and make it ugly or anything.
I should point out, yes, I agree with you completely. Ventilation, I'm muttering about it now. In all honesty, in my own car, I change the ventilation in my own car 3 or 4 times a year. That's it. Climate control, set it, leave it. That's it.
Okay.
It's the same summer and winter. I don't have anyone else in the car with me whinging that they're too hot, too cold, or too blowy, or whatever else. So there's that. Technology, I didn't really play with the technology much, I'm afraid.
You don't have time to do that.
No real time to do that. But is it almost in every car? It's getting there. Definitely getting there. It felt swift enough. Around the hill route, again, same awkward corners. But these are like country roads. This is a car built for the countryside and built for driving on country roads. You do not drive this car like you're Chris Harris. Okay, you are not trying to drift this. I went from the Polestar when I was like, rap, rap, to this, which was like, tick tock, tick tock. I'll let all the Porsche and everyone past who are in such a rush. It was a relaxing thing to drive. It was actually the perfect antidote to what I'd just driven. And it's a car that you can just chill in.
What a ridiculous
definition.
No, but that was it with the S90 is when I was driving it, at no point did I feel I wanted to hustle along.
I was going to
get there, and the engine was good enough that I could get there fairly quickly, but I was not going to hustle and, you know, I must rush to get there. We will get there when we get there. Okay. I'm very jealous of that. Well, I'm jealous of all the cars so far. So what did you, so from the serene, relaxing Nordic fjords, what did you move on to next?
There's actually a car missing from this list. Actually, from there, what I did was the one that was missing from the list.
Mm-hmm.
It's my own fault, because I typed up the list. It is.
Break out the
Focus RS.
Oh, that was just before lunch.
That was just before lunch.
And you've missed it off this list as well.
Have I?
Yeah, it's not even on that list.
So I drove a Focus RS too. Very briefly, just a quick splat in the Focus RS.
Just to get your appetite going for
lunch. Yeah, it was an appetizer. because it was sitting there, and I was walking past Ford, and I was off to meet Rob and Ben for lunch. And It was there, so I felt obliged to go over and ask if I could drive it, because I feel that we are the only people with anything to do with motoring in the UK who haven't driven the Focus RS.
We haven't driven the Focus RS or the ST. Fiesta ST, we haven't driven.
We haven't driven it.
So we don't know, but no. I'm not sure we could. I mean, we've not tried to drive sliced bread either. But
no. I've eaten
so
quite a lot,
so the Focus RS. Then.
Yes.
Talk me through it, Alan.
So the Focus RS, the Focus RS, as you can imagine, is a Ford Focus that often comes in a rather striking shade of blue. And the first thing you notice when you get into a Focus RS is that you are getting into a set of bucket seats. Okay. They're proper Recaro bucket seats.
Comfy?
Extremely. They hold you in place. Now,
they need to hold you in place?
They do need to hold you in place, yes. yes, the first thing you notice is just how comfy the seats are. Now, I will point out, given that somebody else has already brought this up in this, that maybe the steering wheel is a little bit offset from the seat, which is a little bit offset from the pedals. And maybe the switchgear isn't the best in the world, because it is, dare I say, just a Ford Focus. And you can feel that there is a certain amount of built to a price. But...
yeah, but that price isn't...
it's not a ridiculous price. That's where I'm going with the but. The other thing is, you've got to remember that this is a... and I don't have a sheet for it. This is a turbo nutter hot hatch with four-wheel drive.
Mm.
So there's a lot of engineering has gone on underneath it. So whilst... sure, I can sit here and say, well, I don't feel that the quality of the dashboard is quite up to the standard of the Volvos that I just climbed out of.
Yeah, it's wasn't. It's 30 grand, though, isn't it?
It's 30 grand for the turbo nutter version, not 50 grand for the turbo nutter
version.
Yeah, I
mean, how many... you know, it's comparable to the...
of a car on a related platform.
Yeah, it's comparable to the Type R.
Yeah.
As in, they are not an outrageous price for... no. Fairly outrageous performance.
A fairly outrageous car, not just the performance. So anyway, all of that melts away when you start moving. And the first time that you sort of put your right foot towards the floor in anger and change gear and it goes pop, and then you keep going, pop, and you're like a kid again.
So and you're like a kid in a fantastic car. Was this lap even quicker than the Polestar lap?
I don't know. I could probably check back the videos and find out. It was not ridiculous.
Did you use the drift mode?
No. Absolutely didn't. Neither did I use racetrack. So there was drift and race, and I didn't do that. I just stuck with sport.
Okay. Which is why you were allowed to continue for the rest of the day.
Well, it's one of these things. You don't want to be that guy. We've all heard the stories of the NSX. You don't want to be that guy.
No.
So,
I don't understand you. Bending a press car is neither big nor clever.
And doing it in front of 400 journalists, really not big or clever. So, no drift mode at all. I did look and see the drift mode and went, ooh, there's the drift mode, and then moved on past it. But it was a very...
so is everything just sharper and more?
Everything was just lots. Lots of it was lots. It was significantly better than the Mark II RS, which I have been in before, which was a horrible understeery thing. This was absolutely not a horrible understeery thing. This was a pointy tool. Okay, much like the Polestar. It was a more juvenile Polestar. When I said the Polestar is a hot hatch that's grown up a bit, it's a Focus RS that has grown up a bit.
Okay.
I do not think that is an unreasonable parallel.
You're the Focus RS thing.
No, not a bad thing in any way, shape, or form for either. It's not a bad reflection on either of them. But no, it was a superb thing to drive, and I can understand quite why everyone thinks that it's so great.
Mm.
Honestly, I can understand what the big deal is
for that price and for what it sounds like it can do.
Oh, just for what it sounds like. Never mind what it can do.
But it just seems phenomenal.
Yeah.
That can be put in, you know, that's attainable.
Yeah, it is totally attainable.
To people, without having to sell kidneys and things.
Are you saying that just before we move into the unobtainium section?
No, that's not my point, because then you did actually manage to have lunch. And after your lunch, to help it settle, what did you go for?
Oh, I went for a large, comfortable car.
Okay.
Wasn't just cruiser. I think. Let me just hang on. Oh, I've gone past ones that are doing that. Yeah. So it was a large, comfortable car that you can sit back.
Executive.
And it's 5 litre supercharged V8 putting out 550 metric horsepower through an 8-speed automatic gearbox.
Did feel relaxed, suitably for a relaxed cruise.
Well, you know, it's good to be bad, as they say in the adverts, or said in the adverts. So it was a Jaguar XJR 5-litre V8 supercharged. Limousine. Essentially, not long wheelbase, it was a short wheelbase. They don't do an R version of the long wheelbase. Well, not officially on the price list, although I'm sure our current Prime Minister has cruised about in one of these. And this, there's a really funny thing about this. First thing you notice, you get in, you go, ooh, this is nice, as you do, and you press the button and it starts, and there's the appropriate Jaguar theatrics of the knob thing coming out the middle, so you can select your gear and everything goes vroom, and the fully digital instruments appear and stuff. And then the next thing
it's got that as it as well.
Okay. It's not the first car to have that.
No.
It's so commonplace these days. But yeah, it did. And the next thing you do is you go, is that headlining suede? And you, ooh, it is.
I think what we're doing now is revealing.
No, I got that.
Certain preferences.
No, so
of
I was.
Colleague.
So I was talking to the head of JPR afterwards, and I was saying, you know, the thing that got me was the suede headlining, and he said, "Did you start stroking it?" And it was like, "Oh yeah, a little bit. Everyone does that."
You didn't.
He said, "It's so cool because you've just got to touch it. It's just like, ooh, that's really nice.
Stroking the suede."
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not fussed. Yeah.
Yes. Right, so I take it it's quite rapid.
Yeah, it's rapid. I mean, the hill route wasn't the best route for it because big old Hector.
Is it noisy or is that kept quiet because it is an XJ?
It's not particularly noisy. So if I'm to relate it to last year's ludicrous saloon, it is quieter than the Lexus GSF. But there was a brrr in there. There was a little bit of burble in there.
Okay.
Of course, it's forced induction, so forced induction cars are generally quieter than naturally aspirated cars like the GSF. Just what a lovely thing to drive. If I had this thing anyway, I had previously decided that if I was an evil Lex Luthor-style potentate business person being driven around cities around the world, then I wouldn't want an S-Class or a BMW 7 Series. I'd want to be driven around in the back of a Jaguar XJ.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's significantly classier. Yep. And having driven it now, that has made no difference whatsoever to my beliefs.
No, I think they're wonderful. I think they look great. I'm amazed they don't sell more.
So am I. I'm amazed and
I
always
think they
look
fantastic. But they may change now on the upsurge, I think is a gentle way to put Jaguar sales. Recently.
Yes, I'm not sure that it's been the root of that. I think the XC has had a lot to do and the
that
F-pace
may rub off.
I do hope so. I like
it's a very
it a
underrated design, really do.
Yeah, I've driven a few. I've driven 7 Series. I've driven current 5, which is a bit smaller. I've driven the predecessor to this, the XJR, the old aluminium one that looked like it was much older. My dad had a diesel one of those, but don't think that made it unrefined. So I was familiar with driving a Jag.
Ding.
Driving a Jag and. This didn't let me down. Whilst the Focus RS had been a little bit sort of Klingon and around the corners, this was. I drove this like I drove the V90. I know I have 550 brake horsepower, but I drove it in a similar manner, but significantly quicker. Not that my heart rate was in any way higher than it was in that car, because this was a light touch car. This is when you drive this with your fingertips. The speed limit was 50 round the hill route. Most of the time that's fine, but on some of the straights you're really being very careful, because otherwise you could get into a lot of trouble quickly. Light touch of the throttle, light touch of the steering wheel, and just I'm wafting in style. That kind of thing. So no, like that a lot.
Excellent. So what did you move on to after that?
So what's next on the list? Next up, I fulfilled some boyhood dreams, I'm afraid. Next up, I was very lucky. I got a quick few minutes because I wasn't really scheduled to be in a Porsche Carrera GTS. So that's a 911 Carrera GTS. Two-wheel drive. All the various numbers, you can look them up. I didn't do a video of this because, do you know what, folks? This bit was for me. Okay.
So selfish.
First time I've ever driven Porsche, and I wanted to enjoy it without having to worry about talking at you guys. I'm sorry. Next time, I promise I'll do it.
Well, there's going to be a next time. So you took it back safe and sound then?
I did take it back safe and sound. After a discussion we were in about not being that guy. It was... I'm going to sound all gushy and rubbish.
So was it what you expected?
I didn't know what to expect. Goodness knows I've been through the configurator enough times. I should know exactly what to expect. There were some corners on the hill route that you slowed down for in every other car that I'd driven. And I wasn't going fast. You know, bear in mind, I was sticking within speed limits all the time. And that I got round in the Carrera and turned to the guy and went, I didn't even notice that corner. We just went round and didn't even touch the brakes. And he said, no, it does that. This is a car whose abilities are so far ahead of mine. Unbelievable.
That it's flattering to the driver?
It's incredibly flattering. It is the only car... I'm going to say this. It's the only car since I've got my MX-5 that I've driven that has better steering. Just all round better steering.
And ladies and gentlemen, you know that is very high praise indeedy.
Yeah, there is no higher praise. I loved the way that you sat down so low. I loved the fact that the dash was so high. I loved the lightness and accuracy of the steering. It was a 7-speed and I was never above 4th. 7-speed manual and I was never above 4th. I was short shifting grossly, partly not to be that guy. And it was just so lovely and so flattering. And I didn't buy a lottery ticket tonight for the Euro Millions either. So. absolutely stunning. Everyone goes, oh, it's Porsche 911. Oh, I'm going to be one of those people now. I'm sorry. There we go. That's that.
So
that's
all I'm going to talk about.
Because I had less than 10 minutes with that car, so let's not get... Because I wasn't meant to have it. Somebody didn't show up, and we managed to very quickly squeeze that in before I drove the next car.
And what was the next car?
Next car is Porsche Panamera Turbo. So that's the latest Panamera. The nice-looking Panamera.
That's still 4 seats.
I don't know. I never looked in the back seat.
You go to the day that I can't get to.
World's worst road tester.
You didn't sit in the back, I know that.
Of course I didn't sit in the back.
You never sit in the back, I know that. Which disappoints me intensely. Curry hooks?
Yeah. Ooh, I didn't look.
Oh, come on.
Sorry, the one that doesn't have curry hooks is the Jaguar XJR.
What?
It's the only one that has no easy means of tying down warm...
How am I supposed to get it back quickly?
You have a man who holds it for you.
For now.
Yes. I'm sure there are ways and means.
Okay, so the nice-looking Panamera.
So the nice-looking Panamera. Again, the Panamera has been described as a car in the Porsche range, which kind of is not the ultimate... takes the brand away from the 911 and what it's all about. Obviously that particular joy goes to the KN, possibly the Macan as well, but most of the KN. What amazed me, and probably one of the reasons why I didn't look in the back seats or didn't even think to open the boot, was because it felt like it was part of the same family as the 911. It really did. It had a similar feeling. It was a more high-tech feeling. It was a more relaxed feeling, but the feeling was still there.
It wasn't as relaxed as the V90 or the XJ?
No, it wasn't as outright relaxed as that, no.
Okay.
No, but you still...
But you appreciated that you were in something a bit bigger, you're something that was more saloony than...
Yes, yeah, than, something that's a bit softer, I'm going to say. And by that, I don't mean wallowy or wibbly or anything like that. I just mean not quite as sharp-edged all the time, I think.
Okay.
Looks have been improved. We've covered the looks a little bit. I think we all know what it looks like. It of course wasn't Sport Turismo. Hopefully they'll have that next year, which is the estate one that we all like the idea of so much.
Even this one looks
great.
No, it does look good. It does look good now.
Interior, most of the interior is kind of screen in the middle nowadays with the Panamera. The previous generation really got slammed for all the buttons. It had all the buttons in the middle, on the center console, all the buttons. Far fewer buttons. Still a fair few, and I don't know what all of them did, but still a fair few. But worth pointing out with these boys that I, being British and polite, it was trickier for me to sort of stop and have a good poke at stuff, because I'm sure I could have asked. I'm sure I should have thought to have asked. But I did have a chappy from Porsche beside me, one of their pro drivery people.
Okay. Going go faster.
Mostly going go faster, actually, yes. you could be down a gear, you know, I think it would cool better, and it's just like, okay.
I'm falling asleep.
Yeah. So there was all that. So we took this on the high-speed bowl as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we got up to the 100, and that was just so that there was a good chance to show the difference between normal mode and sport mode as well, as feeling what it's like at speed.
I presume it was quiet as a mouse and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, 100. It felt like you were doing 40.
Yeah.
There's a curious thing about the high-speed bowl is that if you look too close to you, you feel that you're driving uphill. If you look too far away, it feels like you're driving downhill. So there is a point you have to look at in the distance where it just keeps it as if you're driving straight and level, which is very strange. Oh, wow. If you're doing like about 100, you can take
your hands. You don't get hypnotized.
Whilst you're going constantly, yeah, well, that's basically it. So whilst you're going at a constant about 100, you can lift your hands off the wheel and it'll just keep on going as if it's straight, because that's what it's configured to. We'll talk about someone doing that in a little while, a bit more than 100. Technology, didn't really play with it, but the drive was how you'd expect. It was bigger. It wasn't as sharp as as the 911, but it was of the same family, and of course it was four wheel drive as well. So you're gonna have to be a right moron to really do something wrong with it.
So again, it sounds like it's another one that you'd like to spend significant more time with, wouldn't we all? But seriously, spend more time with to get a better feel.
There was a funny
thing. That's the problem with all these things
I think
everybody's appreciating is you are not with them for long. These are very much gut, raw feelings.
It felt bigger than the XJR. I don't know if it is. I should probably compare the sizes and stuff. But it felt bigger than the XJR.
It does look wider, but I don't know whether it is.
Yeah, am I going to have to check?
No, it's
too small. No. The print's too small. But so it was rather cool.
So you were happy to drive two Porsches then?
I was very happy. I hadn't really intended on driving one. I'd only popped around to catch up with the PR there.
So what did you move on to then?
Mazda 2 GT Sport.
Okay. So we're with your favourite company in the world.
We're with my favourite company. So it was a bit tricky because the Mazda 3 that they had there was exactly the same spec as the one my sister's just bought. So I've really driven that. I've done a mile or two, or 24 and a bit thousand, in current MX-5. So I didn't feel the urge to drive a 1.5 litre MX-5 or another MX-5. So, Mazda 2 it was. And this was the new model that they've just brought out, which is a 1.5-litre naturally aspirated engine, of course, because it's a Mazda, with 115 brake horsepower. And it's got all the toys in it.
But that's quite a light body, isn't it?
Yes, it's quite a light car. That's relatively powerful as well. Yeah. So, a nippy little warm hatch. from Mazda. And it's quite a luxurious little warm hatch as well. So it was, remember rightly, it was part leather, heated seats, full sat nav, stuff in there, cruise control, Bluetooth, all the widgets, all in there. A standard, I believe. So it was something a little bit different. I say completely the opposite end of the line from the Panamera, bringing me back down to the back down to ground with a bump.
A bit more motoring podcast.
Far more motoring podcast. But a nippy little engine. So if that's that 1.5, then that's going to be the same engine that you get in the 1.5 litre MX-5. Bit of a heavier car, most cars are, but it whipped along quite nicely.
Hill route again,
absolutely, all the hill route.
Well, you must be nailing these corners by now.
I'm quite used to the corners by
after
this point.
Apex.
A little bit, yes. it zipped along quite nicely. It was splicing through the gears, all these kind of things. I felt there was a bit much body roll in there.
Compared to your MX-5?
Well, the trouble is, compared to my MX-5 and compared everything to the shared Yaris, everything has a bit of body roll. So there's some bits and pieces there, but if you're looking for a small compact hatchback, you could do much, much worse.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you like your toys.
Well, Mazda's got a really nice look across their range at the moment.
They seem to
be one of the few companies that has managed to make it work across different sizes and different shapes of their vehicles.
Kodo design, isn't it? Or is that the previous generation?
I should know this. Whatever the current one is, it's
works.
Working.
Yes. Basically, it works. And it works on everything from the new CX-5s, the Mazda 6, right the way down to the Mazda 2.
Yep.
So that was really nice. That was a lovely little change. And sort of pretty zippy. It had nearly no miles on. One of the things I've discovered is Mazda's current range of engines, when you get to that 12,000 mile, that first service, 12,500 miles, all of a sudden it becomes significantly nippier. The trouble is, press cars don't stay press cars that long. So nobody ever gets a chance to try that.
Okay.
So that was fun.
So what'd you go to next?
Well, next up, I popped round to, mostly for a chat, really, with some of the friends at Subaru and Isuzu around there. And whilst I was there, Ian Cook from Pop Gang Colour climbed out of a pro-driven WRX, looking a little bit greener than he has done when I met him in the past.
Not due to his paints
on this occasion. So the chap had to go fill up, and then I got a shot taken for a run in the WRX. They had a setup where we weren't driving ourselves, it was pro-driven. They had their own little circuit set up on one of the mini handling loops, which is a B road with strip of concrete-y stuff that wiggles a lot. And then onto the high speed ball. So you go around the handling route twice. Now, I know that you've had exactly the same car. It was the one that you had, or at least it was another one wearing the same number plate.
Okay.
The reason I'd had to wait for the chap to fill up with fuel was, Andrew, when you had that car, how many miles did you achieve on a tank of fuel? Can you remember? Was it 250? And you felt that you were pacing it a little bit?
Well, towards the end, I was being very gentle, but yeah, it's economically, it's not the greatest in the world.
But roughly how many miles?
God, I think I was lucky to get 20 miles to the gallon.
No, how many miles from the tank?
Oh, 225, yeah.
Okay,
like that.
Let's put that into perspective. So, Andrew, 225. This day, doing that and going around the high-speed ball, they were getting 75 miles from a tank.
Okay, I don't feel so bad. But I'm glad it wasn't my credit card either.
Yeah, on the other hand, you weren't driving people sideways around this narrow strip, which I swear felt not much wider than this sofa at the time from the passenger seat, sideways at 85.
As one does.
Proper rally staging it round, which was quite incredible. It's one of those times when I feel that maybe I don't make such a bad passenger after all. Round that, and then out Was that Hypocrisy I heard?
I said, yes, you do.
Yeah. So, and then from there, off to the high-speed ball, where we were about the only people who were allowed on the topmost loop, which is...
Is that the super fast?
It's the super fast one. So we got up... Well, it was... I kind of noticed the speed, and I'd really quite noticed the speed as we went roaring past everyone else who was held at 100 and thinking, ooh, we're fairly nipping on here. And I looked, and just as he changed into sixth at 140,
we get then up. Understood why only 75 miles to the tank.
Yeah. So we got up to about 150-odd, pretty much maxing it for like 3 or 4 miles. And then back down, and then by the time you were down at 70, it felt like 30. It was ridiculous. A proper, I forget the chap's name, I think it was Jason, proper pro driver. A real hand, as you do with these. So I wasn't driving it. I've driven it before. You had it for a week. It's a fantastic car, fantastic piece of engineering. Again, it fits up there with the Civic Type R, the Focus RS, and the WRX is really the granddaddy of them all in that. And it was fantastic to get shot and be driven by someone who really knew what they were doing and not Andrew.
Yes. Yeah. It must have made a pleasant change.
Mm-hmm. So, finishing
off... What did you round off with then?
Rounding off the day with the stand that I had visited many times during the day for reasons that will become clear at some point. And I tried the Hyundai Ioniq Hybrid. It's a bit of a cheat because it wasn't a first driver car. You were at the launch in the UK, weren't you?
I was, yes.
But I fancied a wee shotty of an Ioniq. So I took one out.
What did you think? It's remarkably like a car.
It feels like it's just like a car. It's very quiet. It's very smooth. It's quite a lot of space. Really liked the driving position. I thought it was... It was really futuristic. That sounds a bit silly. But you know where you saw those concept cars, you know, where people were quite relaxed and quite reclined in, you know, when people... All these things, as always, nobody's ever sitting like this over the steering wheel in a concept car. They're always reclined like this, and it was that kind of feeling in it. I've never driven a Prius. I'd like to try one at some point. But.
I still maintain that if I didn't tell the family that this was a hybrid or an electric car, and got them to sit in it and just drive off, they wouldn't know that there was anything. Unusual is not quite the right word, but it didn't that it had a different drivetrain,
and they didn't notice the noise
because they wouldn't notice that it wasn't making a noise as you started up or anything like that. That you just drove off, and eventually they might turn and go, "Oh, this is quite quiet, isn't it?"
Yeah.
And you could go, "Well, yes, there's a reason." But interior wise, it's very normal, very expected car, isn't it?
It has a touch of futurism in there.
There's touches.
It's very.
But it's not in a, you're in the future.
No.
Pay attention.
No.
You're special. There's nothing like that.
There's not a lot of blinging and blooping going on and stuff. And you can get, you know, I whittled the display until I got it showing me this is when it's using the petrol engine, this is when it's using the battery, this is when it's charged. Because you have to do that, because I'm me. I did get told off that I hadn't tried the sport mode. Oh, you should try it in sport mode. Far more interesting around there in sport mode. And it was like, yeah, but it was the end of the day. It's time to chill out. But again, yeah, so it was just very chilled.
Everything is where you expect it to be, type.
Yeah, very light steering, but but pretty accurate too. Again, I knowing it was an economy car, this sounds awful. Knowing it was an economy car on sort of economy tyres and these kind of things, I'm always slightly careful to start off with. So I wasn't hooning it. But I was amazed at just how normal it felt. It was just, if everybody drove a vehicle like that in the future or even now, I can't work out how the world would be a worse place. If everyone did that as their daily, I'm not saying get rid of sports cars or get rid of internet. Of fun cars. But if people who didn't care about cars drove that every day, I think the world might be a better place. That sounds ridiculous.
Oh, God.
But it does. No, it's just...
Next week, we'll be solving world peace and famine.
This week, we've done climate change in accord... Yes. Climate change, sponsored by Trump. Yeah. So that was it. That was towards the end. I'm sorry. I was kind of knackered by that point. But yeah, that was that. Now I'm really pleased I tried it because I was very curious. I was slightly jealous that you'd managed to go on that particular launch. But yes, it was as you say, it was very Hyundai. It was very, everything is just there. Mm-hmm. Just at your fingertips. I like that a lot. So that pretty much rounds it up, which is like 12, 11, 12, 13 cars later, actually. I might have miscounted. So yeah, there was a lot of positivity there, and I'm aware of that, and I'm aware that some people are like, oh, these people, they're not very cynical about stuff. But I'm going to be honest, if I've got a limited amount of time, which I do, not just on that day, but generally, and I do have a choice of vehicles I can drive, then I'm not just going to drive stuff I don't like for the sake of it.
Yeah, and as you said, the manufacturers know what the course is. They know the roads they're going to go on and the roads they're going to state that their cars must go on.
Mm.
So they are going to bring ones that are favourable for that rather than ones that are not going to show themselves off in their best light. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to be realistic about this. And you had 20, 25 minutes in these. Tops.
Yeah, maximum.
So, you know, it these are taster. You know, just you were.
And please take them as that, everyone.
What you were doing was, what's that, the rapid dating thing, whatever that is.
That's called speed dating.
Speed dating. That's what you were doing with the cars.
It kind of was car speed dating. That's a really good way of putting it. That's, yes, very much car speed dating.
So what's your takeaway from that then?
From the whole day?
Yeah.
I bought a Porsche 911. Oh.
Okay. That seems a sensible
swap. So do you have? It seems a very sensible swap. I did, because I found myself in the Porsche configurator, and now they've got a thing where you can click on it and find out the finance options. That could be very dangerous, everyone.
Not for me.
And you go, but I could have a Boxster S with a few choice options, and it's only going to cost me this much a month, plus £20,000 final payment after 2.5 years or something. So I don't think that'll be happening, sadly. I just can't bring myself to do that.
What were you surprised by of everything you drove? And this can be good or bad.
What was I surprised by? Oh, gosh. I was surprised by the V60 Polestar. I didn't expect it to be as aggressive as it was.
Okay.
I didn't expect it to be as aggressive as it was. Are you going to tell me, ask me what I was delighted by next? Because that was the Focus RS.
Okay, good.
I can understand where the hype has come from on the Focus RS. I could also understand where my driving license would end up if I owned it. more so than just about anything else, although the Polestar would run it a close second. I liked the Polestar because it was like a grown-up Focus RS.
Okay. So I suppose it just leaves you to say... Or on behalf of the podcast, thank you to the peoples.
Absolutely. So thank you so much. And I've lost the start of my list now. But thank you so much to absolutely everyone. Thank you to the Society of Motor Manufacturing and Traders, most of all, for organising it. We really do we really do appreciate the effort that's put. I know that some of the big publications and stuff could get any car they wanted, any time they wanted. And this is a great chance for some of us to actually go up, meet people in person, because I did a lot of talking in between this on the way through. So thanks to the folks at Toyota, Honda, Infiniti, Volvo, Jaguar, Land Rover, although you probably won't be thanking us, Porsche, Mazda, Subaru, and Hyundai. Yes. Really brilliant. And everyone else that I didn't get a chance to see, so BMW Mini, Fiat Alpha, any of the French brands, anyone to do with Volkswagen Group and Mercedes-Benz. I just didn't get near you, I just didn't have time as well. And there's still some people that I'm trying to follow up for chats, whom I almost bumped into and didn't quite manage to finish off discussions. So lots and lots. It was a hugely busy day and well worth it.
Yep.
Which, overall, if I am quicker than I am here, really brings me to the point to remind you that between now and the next time, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and via the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget to leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter. And if you want to give us a little extra help, then please don't hesitate to visit our Patreon page. If you go to motoringpodcast.com and click on the big orange Patreon button on the right-hand side to find out more about that. That makes a massive, massive difference. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is via Twitter, when you're not being a child. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you'll find me there. And if you wish to discuss grown-up GTIs with you, Alan, what's the best way?
Best way, as ever, Twitter as well. It's at AJP Bradley, BRADLEY. We'll be back before very long. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.